Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. For 35 years, New Life has been transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hello, everybody. It's Becky Brown in with you today. We are so excited that you're here with us. And by us, I mean Dr. Jill Hubbard and special guest, Dr. Henry Cloud. Hello, everybody.
Hello, guys.
We are celebrating the launch of Henry's book, Trust. And, you know, Henry, Jill and I were talking at the break. We were wondering about the timing. Why a book like this now? What is the essential, you know, like, is it because there wasn't anything out there? Is it something that's been on your heart? What's the motivation there?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's a few interesting things about this. One of them is a God thing, I think. But this is a, you know, you guys know as clinicians, there's literally no problem that we ever get asked to help with that, at some level, whether it's a clinical problem like depression or anxiety or an addiction, or whether it's a relationship problem like a marriage or a family or work, or if it's a performance problem in some way where something is broken down, somewhere threaded through there is going to either be somebody being wounded by trust or unable to trust to get to the next place, either of healing or growth. And so trust, literally, in any kind of life change, it is, you know, it's one of the, it's kind of the fuel for all of it in some ways. And so this is, you know, something I've worked with for years. I created this model years ago, and I've used it, you know, extensively in a lot of different, from, you know, consulting with teams and companies to individuals and marriages. And so I've always used it. And then finally, I thought, you know, I'm hearing this so much, it's, maybe I should write it. And the interesting God moment about this is that it would be about 6 years ago, probably, I was ready to write the book, and I had taught it for a long time, and I just could not get, you know, all the publishers that wanted to do the book, it just didn't feel like any of them really got it to the extent that I felt like it was important. And I hit pause. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't the right thing, you know, and so, you know, just went in a different direction. And then a year ago, a little over a year ago, when you start to, you know, I was feeling it so strongly. And then, or when we actually did the deal, it would have been, you know, a couple of years ago, and I just would have never have seen that, because now when the book has come out, I would never have seen how things are now, where everybody says, oh, we need a book on trust right now because everything's so divided. You know, families have broken up over disagreement about a church doctrine or a politic or, you know, something with COVID. And trust is just such a big issue now that I thought, well, maybe God maybe was in hitting pause for me, because it, you know, it could have fallen on some deaf ears in some ways compared
well,
to now.
Certainly through COVID, all of our trust was shattered, right? It was the invisible, silent thing we needed to be afraid of and couldn't see.
And it divided a bunch of us. Well, you know, we're going to be back in just a few minutes. We're going to take some calls. But, you know, Henry, this book is perfect timing, and I think the Lord was in it. Isn't that amazing how He works in our lives, in our hearts, in the work that we do? And we had said this on our previous show, He's trustworthy, He's faithful. And I'm so grateful that He gave you the wisdom and the ability to communicate these truths about trust. And we're going to continue talking about this. We're actually, you know, if you give a gift of any amount to New Life, we'll send you a copy of Henry's book, Trust. And we'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. It's Becky Brown with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Henry Cloud. We are talking all about trust. And Henry, you know, Boundaries, this book that you and John wrote so many years ago, changed so many people's lives. I mean, just millions and millions of people know about boundaries. But, you know, it's interesting. There have to be parallels of drawing boundaries and trust. And what would you say some of those would be? Because, you know, definitely we talk about boundaries, setting boundaries, but how do you know where trust enters into that process of drawing a boundary?
Joe, you start.
Well, yeah, I would just think, I mean, trust is kind of, trust, yeah, I have a question. Trust is the precursor, right, to boundaries, right? We have to know what we can trust and what we can't trust, and then we set boundaries around what is not trustworthy, right?
And we also, you know, a lot of times people just think of boundaries as limit. And that's one of the functions of boundaries is the ability to set limits. But a boundary is basically a property line. You know, that's the way it's used in the Bible. That's the way everybody's got a property line around their house or their apartment where this is me and I got my neighbor over here. And if the neighbor steps over, that the Bible calls that a trespass, right? And that's when we, you know, set the limit. But a property line basically says that you own and control what goes on in your property. And learning how to trust is a process of diligence of owning and taking ownership. Look, if I'm getting hurt in some way, I've got to look at and become a steward over my heart. And that's when I got to, you know, learn that, you know, boundaries might be, I might need to close the gate on that fence with this person because they're bringing some stuff into my yard that didn't feel good. But on the other side, we can have wounded trust muscles. And we've built walls instead of boundaries. And a boundary has a fence in it that, or a gate that can open up not only to get the bad stuff out of us and throw the trash out, but also to open up to let good stuff in. Because all of us would starve if, you know, if Amazon couldn't deliver my new thing or new life couldn't send me a new book, you know.
Because we built a fortress.
We need to open the door sometimes. You know, when our tickets to, you know, a marriage weekend show up, you better open the door. And so
that's it.
So boundaries, like y'all are saying, boundaries are fully integrated into trust. We got to know when to open the gate and let somebody into our hearts, minds, souls.
Well, you know, we have a great
close the gate.
That's it. We have a great question coming from caller Ruth. Hi, Ruth. She's calling us from Washington, D.C., listens on WAVA. How can we help you, Ruth?
Hi. Yeah. What you just said pretty much sums it up. I guess I've built walls instead of gates, and I feel like I've backed myself into a corner where I no longer even trust my own intuition or instincts or an accurate assessment of life, past or present. It seems like
when you feel something, you don't know whether to believe it or not. Right?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of what I thought was reality has been kind of turned upside down. And it's happened over years, and for many reasons, you know, probably rooted in some childhood trauma, but went strong for 5 decades, and you know, I accepted the Lord when I was a child, and really felt assurance of salvation for 3 decades, and here I am, almost 60 years old, and I'm having trouble, and it's really scaring me with even feeling a sense of that assurance anymore.
The assurance of your relationship with God, that it's secure?
Well, essentially, yes, and not, I guess because of, you know, just thinking, well, some people, because of an inability to maintain belief, apparently, you know, it's how we end, right? That is important. And I'm not ending well. I'm not fruitful right now at all, that I can see.
What's going on? You feel like that is, what's the season that you're in? You know, the Bible talks about seasons, and there's winters and springs and falls, and or summers and falls, and you know, it's usually the fall that's the fruitful season, because a lot of stuff has gone on before then, and winter mm-hmm. can even be a time when nothing is happening because old stuff's being, you know, the Bible's clear about that. So what season are you in right now in your life? What's going on around you?
It's definitely winter. You know, the adult kids have moved out. But there are other things going on, you know, with health. Mm-hmm. I feel like my body has betrayed me. I feel like my mind has betrayed me, because the stuff has, you know, Lyme, mold, gone neurological. It's very dark.
Literally, your health is that the big one that's kind of put you in a dark place?
I think so, because when I started to address some of the issues, it seemed to drive it across the blood-brain barrier, and then just incredible depression, and now it's anxiety and depression, and so I kind of white-knuckle it through the days. And, you know, after a while, friends and family are just worn out, and for good reason. You know, they have their own struggles.
So what can Ruth do now that she feels backed into a corner because of all of these issues?
Well, and let me just say, Ruth, it sounds like because so much is happening around you and to you, that it's causing you to have doubts. Maybe where is God? How is he working? Is he hearing you? But it's causing you to question your faith. Is that correct?
Yes. I don't have any trouble believing in God, in Jesus as the only way. You know, that the
okay,
the facts,
so that's
solid.
Right. That's intellectually solid. You know God is God.
Intellectually I know, but in terms of the direction I'm headed and continue to seem to, you know, be more and more, I'm ashamed of some of the thoughts that I have. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel worthy in any way. I feel more sinful than ever before, just because of, you know, thoughts about, well, this evil and, mm-hmm. and all the evil around us. It's just hard to untangle. And so, you know, and there, I mean, in the back of my mind is, well, what if you're just not chosen?
So the trust issue there, Ruth, is the doubt of everything, whether it's health, spiritual, the future, all of those things. You know, Henry, I know that we get these kind of issues, you know, in different forms. What is a way for Ruth to kind of move forward in building trust, whether it's in her relationship with God in her ability to make good decisions? You know, what would be some of the processes?
Can, Henry, before you go, can I jump in here real quick?
Sure.
Because I wanted to say something more about what we were saying previously. There's a difference between God and man. And with God, we can have an, we can start with an intellectual trust. And sometimes that's the only place we're at, is just that intellectual trust. And so we want to remind ourselves that God is good, and remind ourselves, and we have His Word to remind us about who He is. And so sometimes we have to cling to that in the midst of the turbulent storms, the depression, the anxiety that wreaks confusion, right? In our short-sightedness, depression depresses our feelings and our mind, right? Anxiety makes us very confused about the future. And so when you're in that storm, we have to remember that Jesus calms the storms, okay? He may, it may not be calm right now, but intellectually, we know that to be true. And sometimes that's our lifeline. Henry?
Very good.
Well, Ruth, as we were asking you about your circumstances right now, and then you started talking about, you know, the health, I hadn't been on the show for a while, so I hadn't talked about this, but basically, for the last 2.5 years, for, you know, recently, I was basically in a wheelchair, and I could not stand up because of the nerve pain in my legs, and it was so severe. I mean, if I would try to drive, I'd have to pull off the side of the road sometimes because I couldn't focus. I mean, it's really, really bad. I have so much empathy for people in chronic pain. But what happened was, ended up having 3 surgeries, 2 total knee replacements and spine surgery. And in, especially with the first one, there were some problems with the pain management. You know, knee replacement's a total internal amputation, is what the surgeons told me. They cut your leg off and above and below the knee and will replace it. And it was in the midst of the opioid crisis, and it was, the first one was in the midst of COVID, and I was way under medicated. And they had protocols. They couldn't give me what I needed. Long story short, I never had thought that, since I went through depression and college, I never had thought I could go into that dark of a place before or again. And I could not. And I remember, and I even saved the text of some of the people that pray for me. They're so dark. I could not. It was so, the pain was so bad for so long. And what happens in those dark places is, and as Jill talked about, you know, when depression hits, you're not really thinking. The depression is thinking. And your your mind, from your, we could go into the neurology of this, but you're producing things that feel like thoughts, but it's like a, it's like a fire hydrant that got hit by a car. It's spewing this stuff out, and it's all negative because your system is, the feeling system, the limbic system, is feeling negative despair and hopelessness, so your brain will come up with ways to explain that. I must not be saved. God must not be there. Those are primarily, like you're saying, brain, body, buried. Those are primarily being produced from somewhere that's not in the spirit. Well, I wanted to say a couple things to you. I might have to come back off the break because I want some other people to hear this too. It sounded like you feel like it's kind of up to you to have enough faith to hold on, to finish well, to get over the finish line. And I want to talk about what God's Word says about that.
I love that. I love that. Hold on, Ruth. We will be back after the break. You know, we always talk about there's hope, but in those really difficult times, we need some practical help as well. because, like you just said, Henry, that our depressive mind doesn't think that way and will tell us the opposite. If you need help, you can call us. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We've got counselors, coaches, we've got workshops. We want to help you in the place that you are in. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. It's Becky Brown with Dr. Jill Hubbard and Dr. Henry Cloud. And Henry, you were just sharing a really challenging time for the last couple of years. And we're glad that you are on the other side of that. But you were going to share something with Ruth about that journey. So continue.
Well, I just want to share a little bit. You know, there's always two sides to where we are. There's ultimate reality. And there's our subjective experience, which either aligns closely to that reality or not. I mean, there are laws of physics that are true. There is gravity, and you can actually fall. And if we fall, you know, you fall from any height, your subjective experience of going down is going to match that reality. You talk to somebody who has vertigo, they're not falling. But internally, they really feel like they are. And you know, if you read the Bible, it parallels those experiences a lot. And a lot of the scriptures are really talking to you right now in that experience of not feeling like you're on solid ground. And the verse I thought of immediately when you said what you said was in Jude 1, I think it's verse 21. It says, have mercy on those who doubt. God is not critical. When Thomas couldn't summon up his faith, Jesus went to meet him and said, you know, touch it. Show you. Be there. That's not what Thomas was feeling. And so I want to give you one verse in particular, and I think this is in John 6, I'm not sure, but here's what Jesus said. He said, no one can come to me unless the Father first draw them, and I will in no wise cast them out. So, apart from the assurance that he's not going to get rid of you, your very desire for him to hold on to you, that means that he is picking you up as you desire him and can't feel it, and as you desire the assurance of salvation and can't feel it. The only reason that you are worried about that is a desire for that not to be true. And the Bible says that very desire is coming from him. So I want you to picture a baby right now, or, you know, haven't you ever seen a baby and they're in ultimate distress and mom is picking them up and holding them and maybe they're colicky and they can't feel how secure they actually are because their system can't take it in at that moment. And that's what the Bible tells us, that you are secure. The only way somebody's not secure in God is, you know, they don't want him. You know, we go to hell because of what we reject. So I just want to align at least the big picture of what you're feeling can be different than what's true. And we know what's true, and that's what God says. But I also want to encourage you to what, you know, these guys were talking about, that I know when I was there that it was the presence of the people around me and who would reach in that got me through that. And I was amazed that I could even go there, really. But that's what pain can do, either physical or emotional. But there is a such thing, and you're right. You know, you said, you know, family and friends. There's compassion fatigue. You know, nurses work shifts. they need some time away, right? When I used to work in hospitals, I'm fully in for 8 or 10 hours, but I got to unplug. And so I would want you to broaden that circle so there's different shifts, and maybe join a good support group of chronic pain, or join some, call a New Life counselor who has a therapy group going on, go to one of the weekends, because we have to broaden, we've got to broaden the safety net. Because if it's too small, there aren't enough shifts to take you through that winter season, which sounds like where you are. Another thing, I grew up in the South around a lot of farming, and in the winter, it doesn't look like anything good is happening out in those fields. There's no harvest. There's no fruit. There's no love, joy, peace, patience, long suffering. There's none of that.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you what is happening. Those farmers in the winter, they're retooling the tractors that are broken. And they're working on the financial markets that are going to be set up to sell their crop the next fall. In other words, it's not even time to be sowing yet. They're fixing the equipment. And right now, I think you need some people coming into your barn and strengthening through trust. You know, we're talking about trust today. I'm going to ask the guys here to send you a new book on trust, because it's going to talk about the broken trust muscle.
We are going to do that. And Ruth, we're glad you called. And to your point, Henry, you do need some people around you, Ruth. And, we'll get you connected with a Life Recovery Group. Maybe come and join us at the Emotional Freedom Workshop. It's online, April 15th. It would be a good place for you to start with the healing journey. You know, it is tough when we're in those winter seasons. But you're absolutely right, Henry, work that's being done. There's stuff that we can do to prepare for spring, which is coming. We'll be right back after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the 1-Year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zipper Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I remember a story that I've heard you say many times, Henry, about parents and boundaries, about the kid that was skiing, so he didn't really have a problem. It was the parents that had the problem. Do you remember that?
Nobody forget it.
Well, it's such a powerful illustration, and I think so many of us can relate to it. We got a caller that's calling. Sean is calling us from Walla Walla, Washington, listens on Sirius XM. Sean, how can we help you today?
Well, hey, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I just want to start out. Hey, a year ago, one of our sons overdosed and passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Now we're having to deal with another addicted daughter, and we're having trouble trusting her. And we had to give her an eviction notice because she's using again, and she's using and abusing us. And after all this, the trust becomes a really hard thing to grasp onto. Mm-hmm. And how do I get that trust back and keep that trust for my kids?
Well, first, Sean, you know, you've gone through something that humans were not designed to go through, and that is you're not designed as a parent to have your kids go before you. Mm-hmm. That's not supposed to.
No.
That's not the design. And so I just can't imagine. I mean, what could be worse? And so the fact that this is hard, certainly, what can we say about that other than so sorry? Mm-hmm. And now what you've got is you've got revisiting of the same dynamics, which are certainly going to trigger that, you know, and take you through it. And then you fear, and in that fear, you know, in fear, it's hard to make or even know if we're doing it, hard to do always the right thing, and even if we are, hard to know it because you're feeling so unstable. And one of the things that I found in you know, the book is on trust. What I would, you know, we're going to send you one. Mm-hmm. It's got a basic, what I tried to do is create a pathway. It's kind of a GPS, and there's five components in there about how trust is built and when not to trust and when to trust. And what's really helpful, if your daughter, I mean, it's your daughter now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. So if your daughter is still engaged with you, I mean, if you had to evict her, that means that she's still getting some things from you, which says that there's some sort of at least a need there, you know, for help. That if there's any way to get all of you together with someone that can help navigate this, what she needs to hear first is that you want nothing more than to trust her. Mm. That you desire within you every single possible fiber of trust. That's what you want. And then trust, you know, it takes two parties, right? And sometimes if you have a structure, and we talk about first, you know, the understanding, and that she really gets that you understand how hard it is for her and what she's going through, first of all. And secondly, that you got to look at the motive and the intent, and that's two-sided, that you want the best for her, but she's got to understand that you have some needs also. Being able to provide that help, and begin to get very specific about what the expectations would be that would reveal that she wants your help also, and she wants it to work for you, and this is kind of what's required. And there's going to be some abilities that she's got to be building in order to get that help, and show some other things, and begin to show a little bit of a tiny track record. Now, it may not begin with getting, you know, full support again like that, but she's got to hear that if she wants help, there is a path for her to be able to have that, but you can't do it just with you. You'll do your side of it, but there's some things that she's got to do as well. Now, the other thing is she's unable to do a bunch of those things. Apparently in her addicted state. I mean, drugs take a life of their own. But she is able to do one thing. God only requires the minimum thing from us, and that is our inability. And so if she can hear, we understand you're unable to pull it off, but what you can do is you can at least say yes, even though you're unable to stay sober, you can say yes to the people in the plan or the structure or the group or the sponsor, whoever it is, you can say yes to the ones that will help us get there. And that's the big first step that's got to happen. And sometimes it helps to take a to have a map to have that discussion with.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I would start. And I'd bring in the outside, you know, parties that are most safe for her.
Right.
And sometimes we brought in parties. Sometimes we may even call a church or pastor that doesn't understand addiction, and they come in and start giving answers before they understand.
Right.
And so that's kind of how I approach it. And secondly, you're in your own pain, and so it's not just that she needs help. I think you need help, and that's where getting in a group of other families that are going through this that support each other, because you're going to see them do things that you don't think you can do because they're so hard, and you're going to see them do some things that aren't helpful, and you're going to know, well, gosh, I don't want to do that. So you've got to get your own sustenance and help here.
Jill?
Right, because it's going to be difficult once when you have had such a tragedy, Sean, and my heart breaks for you as well. And then there's like a deja vu happening, like here we go again. Your anxiety is just going to be off the charts of no, 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 no. Like I already know how this plays out and this can't happen again. Your daughter is also reeling from her brother's death. And unfortunately, she's using the same methods to cope as he used. Right? So that's where I think the understanding of her pain. And even though in order to truly get help, she needs to be drug free, sometimes we have to go and say, let's go and address the pain that you're feeling from this loss. Let's put her in a group. Let's put her in therapy. Let's do some trauma work hand in hand with trying to minimize the drugs. But it may be so intolerable for her that there's all this acting out that's happening. And so there's a lot of chaos that comes when a person is removed from a family structure. And so and you said it's just been a year. Everybody has got to be really, really reeling still. Yeah.
Yeah, Sean.
And one more thing I would say to you, Sean, that, you know, it's so hard for parents when kids make choices, when you've done all you know what to do. And when I started the book, and I was starting out, everybody's been betrayed in some way, in some severe ways like you have. You got good company because God says as early as in, I think it's Genesis 6, I put the verse in there where it said, God was sorry that he had even made man. Because the choices they were making, and he was heartbroken. And I, a lot of times I'll say to parents, you know, God has the same problem you do. But he didn't give up in Genesis 6. There was a plan that unfolds that is able to bring them back when it's possible. And that's what I want you to do, is find some good shepherds to take you down a path with a good plan.
I love it. Well, Sean, we're going to send you a copy of Henry's book as well as the Life Recovery Workbook on Grief. And we'd encourage you maybe even to join us at the Courageous Parents Workshop this Saturday. But we have an interventionist that can help your family as well. They're incredible people who go into these situations and can help you create a path. We're so glad you called. We'll be praying for you. And we'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. It has been just an amazing day. And we're going to even be more amazing because Larry Sonnenberg has joined us in the studio with a quick word.
Yeah.
Larry.
Well, thank you. I just want to call attention to a couple of workshops. I'm not going to pitch money today other than saying, you know, we need your help, so please make a gift as you can. But the workshops, we got a live workshop this weekend, Every Man's Battle, Washington, D.C. And there is so much out there, so many men that are struggling of all ages, size, race, any situation of life. So please, guys, call us and get some help. Ladies, if your husband's one of those, call us and let us get him some help. So this weekend, Washington, D.C. The other one is an online workshop, and it's Courageous Parents. And it's targeted to help you with your adult children, because we're not supposed to be parenting them anymore, but we all seem to do it. So you got to be courageous and work on it. Jim Burns, Dr. Jill Hubbard, and Steve Arterburn will present at that, and it will help you navigate through those times. Now, more of you guys and Henry. Thanks.
Oh, great. Well, you know, if for a gift of any amount to New Life, we are going to send you a copy of Henry's book. And we're just so grateful to be able to offer that to you. I know that, you know, Henry, you've changed a lot of our lives for the good. God mm-hmm. has used you in a mighty way through your work. And, you know, back to the book a little bit, we talked about those five essentials: understanding, motive, ability, character, and track record. They're essential to trust. Which one of those would you say is the hardest thing for us as we work on building trust or relationships?
You know, I was in a parenting seminar one night, and a lady said, so if you could say one thing about raising successful kids, what would it be? I go, there's not one
thing. There's not one thing, exactly.
So what do you want, food, water, or air? You pick one. Okay, I'll name one.
There you go.
You know, God says we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and he's wired our whole system to hit the go button and trust with an algorithm that has to come together. But I think we can put them in order. There is a kind of an order, typically, that of how this works. And the first one is, we just can't trust somebody if we don't feel like they understand what we need and what we feel in our reality of what it's like to be on the other end of them and what we experience. I mean, look, if people didn't feel like you understood their everyman battle struggle, their marriage struggle, that you really get it, how painful that is for them and how lost you can feel in that situation, they're not going to call New Life. But you guys do that so well. But then the second one is the motive, that we have to feel like somebody's not just out after their own interest, that they really are for us. When somebody goes to one of your workshops, they feel those therapists are there for them, that those therapists mm-hmm. are happier about their getting well and having a fruitful life than they are about their own job or you know, making a living and getting paid for it or whatever. It's real. The motive shows we trust when somebody, we feel like they're for us. And then, you know, you go down the list and they all have to kind of stack up. But if you, in terms of what's hardest, one of the things that I see over and over and over is it's so hard sometimes to get somebody who's so self-centered to get out of themselves and hear what mm-hmm. it's like to be on the other side of them. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
sometimes that takes a referee. I you know, I'd call it sometimes a traffic cop. You got in an intersection, and you see people at sideways with each other, and they're not really looking out for the other car. And a traffic
right.
cop, a good counselor, stands in an intersection and says, stop, let's see what they got to do. Let's try to understand the turn they've got to make. Let's look at their speed. And I think that's kind of the hardest, because it's the most basic, and it's the one, because everybody wants to be heard,
mm-hmm.
but we can't trust until they can hit stop and listen to what I need from you. Listen and hear what I need from you. And that can be the hardest hurdle to begin this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful to experience that in relationship, too. To be fully seen, fully heard. And I always think it's the challenge of each of us. How are we doing that for the relationships that we are in? How are we able to be present and to listen?
Right, and, to try to get behind someone else's eyes and see it from their side.
Yeah,
just our own.
I had the greatest experience. I'm in Orlando, and we did a big event last night in Orlando for the launch of the event. And I think you can probably find that somehow. But Michelle Williams, if you know who she is, from Destiny's Child and, you know, Grammy winner and all this, and she says, went through some really hard things with depression and really, 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 really tough stuff. And as she shared about this and, you know, began to talk about her vulnerability, how that, it just built such a bridge. But I was talking to her before we went on stage. I said, why did you decide to join me in this? And she said, I'm here because one of your books changed my life. Mm-hmm. And I said, what was that? And she said, Safe People. And she said, you know, I was having a hard time in a relationship. And I picked up the book to show him how he wasn't safe. And I said, and I read the book, and all I could see was how I wasn't being safe first. Mm-hmm. And I said, Michelle, you're my new favorite person. Because of what you just said, Becky, the Bible says, look, even if we've got an unsafe person or somebody's breaking trust, it says that we can't see them clearly until we get what's in our own eye, blocking the vision to be able to see them clearly. Now, that may be that we're not being as you know, illustrative of the elements of trust as possible. It may be that we have our own pain in our eyes and can't see clearly.
I love what you
just said, that to look at ourselves first, that's why we put, you know, families of addicts in their own group.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some things that, you know, maybe the pain is blocking us or we just don't know how to respond. We have to look at ourselves when we're with an untrustworthy person in order to know when to go forward and when not to and what to do.
I think that's the challenge of all of our lives is to continue to grow and to be more like Christ, which is, you know, what we're talking about when we talk about growing and being the best version of us to have those trusts.
Becky, I gotta say something here that both
please
of you guys know as clinicians.
We're gonna come up against the end, audience, Henry, so do it. Yes.
Okay, I'll go real quick. But the audience may not know this. When you're trained as a psychologist, okay, and you take your cases into a supervisor, and this is training, right? And or he said or she said this, and what did you say? Well, I said this. Well, if you're instructing somebody, you would think, well, that wasn't the best thing to say. Say this instead. That's not what they do. What they do is, well, why'd you say that? Because I thought, well, what were you feeling when the client said this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you learn that even your attempts to help are so affected by your own issues that you got to get those out of the way first before you can see clearly even to say the right thing.
So true. Thank you, Henry. You'll be back tomorrow. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, listeners.
Thanks for listening.
We're so grateful.
We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.